run to the base.
Stop something, yeah, we should be okay.
We left off, I think it was 3 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken. Last time we were talking about ribbis, so we'll try to continue from the right point. So if I'm not mistaken, we were talking about different types of scenarios of ribbis, derech mekech u'memker, different types of business dealings that appear to look like ribbis. We mentioned that all these kinds of ribbises that we were talking about, at least at this point, they're only ribbis midrabanan. Ribbis deraisa is only when it's ribbis ketutza, when there's actually a set amount of ribbis that's going to be paid, that's actually planned according to the Rambam at the time of the halva, according to others later on. Or it has to be also derech halva. It has to be some kind of a lending type of a setup where if it's just a mechira, which just merely looks like ribbis, so that's the definition only going to be derabanan. But you have to keep ribbis derabanan as well. So we mentioned that one of the applications of ribbis derabanan is when a person prepays for something and they get a better deal because they're prepaying. So that's a problem of ribbis, because I'm not obligated to pay the money until I get the object. So if I'm giving you the money up front, in effect what I'm doing is I'm lending you the money. So at least with the Rabbanan, this is viewed as a loan. And now if you're giving me a better deal, you're giving me more than I would have otherwise gotten if I would have paid on the spot, that's considered to be a problem of Ribbis Rabbanan. As an extension of this, the Mishnah tells us in Bava Metzia that not only if we actually stipulate that I'm going to get a better deal for paying up front, but even if there's a possibility that I'm going to get a better deal for paying up front, that's also a problem. That's what the Mishnah speaks about, poskin ala peros. Let's say, I want to buy fruit from you in advance. The fruit doesn't exist yet. The fruit's not here yet. It's the season. So I'm going to give you money for the fruit, and we're going to make a deal. We're going to lock in a certain price. Now, it could be that the price may fluctuate, and it may turn out that I'm going to get a better price. I'm going to get more fruit than I would have gotten if I would have paid you at the right time. So even though it wasn't clear at the time when I gave you the money, it wasn't like we spoke about 3 weeks ago, that I give you the money and I say, listen, I'm giving you money up front, and I'm insisting on a better deal, insisting on more than I would have gotten if I would have paid you on the spot. No, here we don't know. Here it's totally the omer. Here it depends on what the market price. So that's also a problem. That's called ein poskin ala peiros. So I'm not allowed to give you money up front and lock in a price which may end up to work in my benefit. Unless some of the conditions are met, some of the conditions that we spoke about in the past. Let's say there's a shar kavua, there's a set price already. So once there's a shar yotze, once there's already a set price for a given object, so then we assume that the price isn't going to fluctuate that much. And even if it does fluctuate a little bit, it doesn't look so bad. Or let's say the person who's giving me the fruit already has the fruit. He just doesn't want to deliver it to me right now. He already has it. So that's also considered to be okay. That looks like as I'm buying the fruit right now, so it's no longer viewed as like a loan. Again, so the continuation we spoke about last month it was already, that you can have a situation where I'm giving money up front, and sometimes it looks like ribbis and sometimes it doesn't. So if it's stipulated that I'm getting a better price, that looks like ribbis. Even if it's not stipulated, but it's possible that I'm getting a better price, that also going to be a problem of ribbis. So the way to avoid a lot of these things is if you have a shara kavua, if you have a set price that's already there, or if the other person already has the object, those things will minimize these types of problems. There is one last aspect of ribbis derabban and derech bechir that I want to speak about, and then we'll move on to the next major topic. And that is what the Mishnah speaks about in Ezer Neshech, about a mechira mispatelas. Let's say if I sell you a piece of real estate, and I reserve the right to, somebody reserves the right to back out. I think they call it an escape clause, if I'm not mistaken. So if I sell you something, and one of us has the right to cancel the sale, that could potentially be a problem of ribbis. Why? What in the world does that have to do with ribbis? So here's the following scenario. I sell you a piece of real estate, so you give me $100,000 for that piece of real estate. Now, if it turns out that the sale is canceled, so how do we view that $100,000 that was given to me? So technically speaking, it wasn't a mechira. If the sale is revoked, so it turns out there never really was a mechira. There was no sale that took place. So the only way that we could view that transferring of funds of $100,000 is like a loan. It's like ilu, the lokeach, gave the mocher, the person who purchased the field, gave the seller $100,000 as a loan. Okay, so that's very nice. He gave $100,000 alone. What's wrong with that? But the problem is that in the interim, the purchaser, who's not really a purchaser, but the purchaser who we thought was a purchaser, was living in the field, was living in the house for the last 2 weeks. So it turns out that now he's going to get his $100,000 back. Once the sale is canceled, he's going to get his money back. Plus, he got used to the house for 2 weeks. So that's a problem of ribbis. That smacks of ribbis. So even though, if you look at this, if you ask most people, what's up to the ribbis? I bought a house from you, and now I'm canceling the sale. So my inyan is on the ribbis. So Chazal said, no, this is ribbis. This looks like, at least midrabbanan, this looks like ribbis. Because whenever the sale is canceled, so that it's igloy milsel mafrei, it turns out retroactively, there never was a sale. If there was no sale, so then the only way to call this money, the only way to label this money in halacha, is to label it as a loan, not as a mechira. If it was a loan, so then the regular rules of loans apply. I'm only allowed to get back exactly what I gave you, not a penny more. Not only not a penny more, not a hana more, not a benefit more. So I gave you $100,000, I get back $100,000, plus 2 weeks for free living in your house.
Well, the money is kept in escrow, and therefore the buyer can't.
Oh, so he's never had the money, right? Then lechari, that would be different, right? So, let me just finish this particular part. Maybe we'll go back to our old minhag, finish the sugya, then we'll go back to the questions. So there are ways to get around this problem. So the poskim tell us there are two possible ways to alleviate this problem of this mechira mispatelas. So one way is to spell out in the contract that, yes, it's true, I'm going to have a right to quote-unquote cancel the sale, but rather than using the phrase, I'm going to have a right to cancel the sale, just reword it and say that I'm going to have a right to insist that you resell it to me. That means we're going to, instead of saying that the sale is batel lemafreya, that the sale is batel retroactively, which will throw into question that we're now going to have to revamp the money and call the money a halva, and we're going to run into ribbis problems, just reword it a little bit and say that rather than the sale being batel lemafreya, we're going to insist, I have a chus to insist to force you to sell it to me again as a new mechira. Mamash, we're going to start over again. So if we start with a new mechira, then it turns out I sold your house for $100,000 and you're selling me back a house for $100,000. And some of the interim, I got 2 weeks of free living in the house without paying rent. That's okay. As long as it's not labeled as a halva, that would be all right. So that's what some acharanim come up with in Eitzah. Other acharanim didn't like it. They thought that was a big game. They thought that, come on, we know what it is. We know that the sale is being canceled retroactively. So my nafkamina, how you call it. So some acharonim didn't like that. So other acharonim have a different eitzah. Other posts can say that maybe what you should do is as follows. You want to have an escape clause in the contract, so put a time on the escape clause. Namely, I'm selling you this land, and the sale should be absolutely valid for the next month. Nobody can back out for the next month. Shum ponim for the next month, you're stuck with it. After a month, then you have, I don't know, you don't want to put a permanent escape clause, you want to put an escape clause for the next 6 months. So from 1 month till 6 months, you have a right to potentially cancel the sale. What's the significance of putting that first month into the contract? So once you declare that first month you can't back out, so that already gives teeth to it. That already makes it look more like a mechira. Again, the whole thing is only midrabbanan. The whole thing is that it looks like a halva. So once you say that you can't back out from day one, that makes it look more like a mechira, more like a sale. If it's viewed in the halacha, more like a sale, then it's less of a problem of ribbis. That's what some achronim like that eitzah. And other achronim don't like that eitzah either. So the poskim and make of you, we combine both of them. That's what the later achronim write. That our minhag is, if a person really wants to sell something, wants to sell a piece of real estate, and really, honest to goodness, wants to maintain this ability to back out, so if he's selling to a Jew, obviously, so then he should be careful to put both of these points into the contract. The number one, this is not a sale that's being canceled retroactively, but rather the sale is valid, it's 100% valid, with a requirement to sell it back to me if I so desire. And number two, that ability to buy it back, to force you to sell it back, should not take effect right away. It should give you a week. For 1 week, the house belongs to you 100%, no questions asked. So that will make it look a little bit more like it's not a canceling retroactively of the sale. It's more of a resale of something. And if it's a resale of something, so then it's less of a problem of ribbis. So a combination of these two eights is what the poskim recommend to do. Vitbatelet.
Okay. Yeah. And the other question is that in most states, there's a realty transfer tax. So if I sell it and sell it back, in theory, I should pay the tax twice. If I cancel it, then there's no tax at all.
Okay. Right, you mean how much does the dinner you want to know how much does the dinner of the Machusa care about some of these games that we're playing in Halacha? That's the question.
You're telling me that I walked over to the state of New Jersey, which is broke right now, and said, by the way, is it possible of collecting $1 million thing, you know, on a mansion tax, probably $10,000, $15,000 each way? Nah, we don't mind. We understand that you're from Jews and therefore we don't want a church state, so we don't want the $30,000.
I don't know.
But again, to me,
I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I don't know. I'm not sure. Right. If you're willing to say that, okay, listen, well, if you invoke this escape clause, then we're going to charge you rent for the last 2 weeks that you... That would be okay, right?
Does that have to be market rent? Or market rent would have been $3,000?
I think it has to be the normal price. Otherwise, if I'm giving you a better price, so that's a problem. That's if I lend you money and then I rent you my house for cheaper than the going rate, that would be a problem. It's interesting, the Gemara tells us in Masechet Erechin that this model of a Mechira Mishpatelis, this idea that I sell you something and then we cancel the sale, then we have a problem of ribbis. So the Gemara says, this problem is as old as the books. This is back to Sefer Vayikra. The Chumash describes such a thing. The Gemara says that what's the halacha in the following case? I sell you a house, b'bati arichoma. So the halacha is, and in the old days when Yovel was knowing, if I sell you a house in a walled city, so I have the right, yamim tiyegu ulah, so I could force you to cancel the sale. So if I sold my house to you, and now 6 months later I want the house back, so I can come in money, and I hand you the money back, and I can force you to kick you out, yamim tiyegu ulah. So the Gemara says in Maseches Erechin, wait a second, doesn't that smack like ribbis? Doesn't that sound like ribbis? That's exactly what we're talking about. That we're forcing the sale to be canceled. It turns out that the Keach lived in the house for the last 6 months. They didn't have to pay rent, and the Torah says it's okay. So the Gemara says, "Yeah, you're right." The Gemara says, "It's ribbis if a Torah tirasel." The Gemara says, "You're right. The Taka, this is ribbis. This would have been aser according to the halacha. This would be a problem of ribbis, but the Torah said that it's okay." So there's this particular tsura, this particular case about the arichom. You can ask a kasha the Rebbe Shlom from your day hilchos ribbis. The Torah said this is the exception to the rule. So the Rishonim discussed that. It's not really the exception to the rule. Midaraisa is not a problem anyway, because midaraisa, this whole thing isn't a real loan to begin with. So the Rishon talk about that. What does the Gemara mean with that cryptic phrase? Ribbis iva tariti rasa. But whatever it is, the Gemara says that concept of mechira mispatelas already appears in the Chumash itself. But if I can, in the Chumash, it's motor. It's in Shechanor Chlamaisi and Aladu. And the regular, unless Bergenfield was a walled city from days of Shubinun, Lamaisa, regular sale that you do today, you would have to be concerned with this problem of mechsei kirimis.
It's like timeshare. They'll let you rent it for a cheaper rate, like than a hotel rate.
Yeah.
And the hope that you're going to buy a timeshare.
That's okay. I think there's no loan. I'm giving you something for the money right now. The problem with these mechiras, which are canceled, right? The problem with these things is that I'm giving you money not in the context of buying real. I'm not getting anything in return. That's okay. So we pretty much, I mean, it's not to say we made a seam on this part of ribbis. It's a complicated part of ribbis, but at least for our purposes, we pretty much completed these types of ribbis, their abanans, these issues of derech mechir, all the different types of scenarios of ribbis that can come up. So now we move on to the next discussion as to who exactly is involved in the issue of ribbis, and particularly we have to focus on Jews in contrast to non-Jews. So here it seems pretty straightforward. The Torah says beferish that la-nochri sashich, la-chir la-sashich, that you're allowed to take ribbis. It's mutlach ha-tchil, the Torah says, to take ribbis from a non-Jew or to pay ribbis to a non-Jew. It's interesting that Tosus quotes a Sofik in Bavli Tzia where there's an Issa ribbis between two goyim. Let's say one goy wants to lend money to another goy. Is that a problem of ribbis enough? So it's a strange opinion in Tosus. So we usually think ribbis, that's one of the Tayag mitzvahs, that's not one of the Shev mitzvahs of Ben Noach. So one day in Tosus apparently held that ribbis is similar to gezela. That's that you're not entitled to the money. It means the Torah says that that's because it's like smacks of geneva, and maybe just as a goy is not permitted to steal from another goy, so he's not allowed to take ribbis from another goy. That's what one Dan Tosus says, and the other Dan Tosus says, no, mapito, tell him Ribbis is not Geneva. The guy agrees to give the money. That's not Geneva. Ribbis is an Isra of the Torah. It's not from the Sheva Mrs. Vinoch. So one guy is allowed to take Ribbis from another guy. So that's how we usually assume. My Nafkamina, the guy might ask us to shadow. It's enough Nafkamina for us because I'm not allowed to be involved in any transaction of Ribbis. Let's say if I'm a lawyer, I'm a broker, I'm setting up this transaction of Ribbis. So we already mentioned earlier, that's a very serious problem. If I'm setting up a transaction of Ribbis between two Jews, that could be a very, very serious halachic problem. But if I'm setting up ribbis between a Jew and a goy, that's for sure mutter. If I'm setting up ribbis between two goyim, that would be 2 days in Tosus. So the minig is pretty makel. I think that I don't think anyone's chashish for that day in Tosus. We assume that ribbis is not from the Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach. But it's interesting that the goyim are machped in that. I mean, in theory, the religious goyim in theory are machped in that. We know that in history, throughout history, so the Catholic Church was machped in that they held that lachichalos ashich, that goyim weren't allowed. They thought they were achicha. Okay, they thought that you're not allowed to lend money, beribis, from one to another. That's why they used to hire the Jews to be the middlemen, to borrow and to lend on their behalf. But then similarly in Islam, so the Islamic law, so you're not allowed to lend money beribis either. That's why there's a whole thing out there called Islamic money. What's it called? Sharia, whatever. They have a whole system. It's become a major issue in the news now. They have a whole system about how to get around their problems with ribbis because they're assuming that there's an Isser. They're included in the Isser ribbis as well. So I was listening.
They won't pay it to anyone.
Okay, will they take it? that you don't know. So they have all kind of kids. So believe it or not, I kid you not, I was once driving somewhere and I was listening to the radio and there was some talk show on about some Islamic law scholar talking all about ribbis and ribbis and ribbis and how to get around it. For an hour and a half, they were describing Heter Iska. That's basically what they were describing. They figured out what it took us, we figured this out 500 years ago, how to make up Heter Iska, so they came up with it in the 1990s, how to make up Heter Iska. When we get to Heter Iska, we'll compare and contrast our Heter Iska with their Heter Iska. We'll see what, I don't know what theirs is all about, but it's pretty much the same as the Heter Iska. Anyway, getting back to the story, so... But one thing is clear, that between Jews and Goyim, for sure is mutter. That's the pasuk in Chumash. You're allowed to take ribbis from a non-Jew, and you're allowed to give ribbis to a non-Jew. Even though this is the din min haTorah, the Gemara Bava Metzia says that midi Rabbanan, the Chachamim prohibited this. Why did the Chachamim prohibit to take ribbis from a non-Jew? So at least one of the reasons why the Gemara says, Ishlo yumad mimaisov, that we didn't want the Jews and the non-Jews to be so close to one another, to have such a palsy-wowsy business relationship. I'm always lending you money, I'm always going to your house to collect the money, I'm always getting ribbis from you, it's not such a good idea. So Shama yumad mimaisov, the Chachamim made a special issa derabbanan not to take ribbis from a non-Jew. So even though the Gemara says this is an issa midrabbanan, the Gemara gives us some exception to this rule. The Gemara says that there are certain circumstances that came up that the Chazal lifted this prohibition. So one of the reasons why Chazal lifted this prohibition, one of the cases was b'chtei chayav. Let's say a guy is really stuck. He doesn't have a way to make a parnasa. So the only way for him to make a living is to be a money lender. So if you're going to tell him, you're going to close that avenue to him also, he's mamash going to starve. So since the whole thing is not an issa derais anyway, the whole thing is only an issa midrabbanan, so the Chachamim lifted this prohibition b'chtei chayav. That's one of the exceptions that the Gemara gives. So Tosis writes in Bav Metzia that we've been very, very makel on this Isser. Tosis says, because it's always with the Chaya for us. In the days of the Rishonim, it was probably true that we know historically the Jews were very, very limited in what they were able to do. They weren't able to own land in the Middle Ages, in the days of the Bali Tosis, and the Jews weren't permitted to be craftsmen because there was a guild system, and one of the conditions to be part of the guild system was you had to be a non-Jew. So if you can't own land, then you can't be a tailor, you can't be a shoemaker, you can't be a scribe, he has nothing for you to do. So the non-Jews needed the Jews to be moneylenders on their behalf. So it used to happen in the Middle Ages, it was common practice that, let's say, John wanted to lend Paul money, so he couldn't lend him that back to the money, so John would lend Yaakov Shmerel the money, and then Yaakov Shmerel would lend the money to Paul. So, but Yaakov Shmerel would make a commission on it, so he would hike up the ribbis a little bit. So the problem was, in the Middle Ages, it was a very, very dangerous job to be a money. It was dangerous to be anything. To live in the Middle Ages wasn't the safest time to live. But it was very dangerous for a Jew to be a money lender because if the non-Jew didn't want to pay back the loan, so the easiest way not to pay back the loan was to kill the money lender. So this was a common problem in the Middle Ages that there were Jews who were taka. Their lives were in danger. In fact, Rabbi Natam found himself in one of these messes. Rabbi Natam was a money lender. People think all he did was write Tosim, but on the side he was a money lender. So he got him to a big sichsuch with one one of his non-Jewish clients, and they didn't do too much, but they took him down to the river, and they were ready to kill him, to throw him into the river. So he was saved. The Rishonim quote the story that he was saved at the last minute by there was somebody, some big noble or something, who was close to Rabbeinu Tam, a nobleman who ended up stepping in, intervening, and saving his life. So this was a dangerous business in the days of Rishonim, but it was the only way for him to make a parnasa. So Tosfos writes, "What do you want from us?" He said, "The only way for us to make a few to support ourselves is to be money lenders." So this Issa D'Rabbanan doesn't apply to us. And then Tosfos writes another svara why the Issa D'Rabbanan doesn't apply. Tosfos writes that the whole reason why they made this Issa D'Rabbanan is they wanted to try to cut down on some of the business relationships between the Jews and the non-Jews. So Tosfos says this makes sense if you lived in a Jewish community, if you lived in Eretz Yisrael, Bisman HaMishnah, if you lived even in Bavel, Bisman HaGemara, so there was a whole autonomous Jewish community, so they were able to do business with one another. You lived in Ardon. Ardon was a totally Jewish city, so you're able to do business with one another. Bisman HaZesah, the Balei Tosfos, what, only to do business with Jews? He said, we have to do business with the French people also, people in the community, the non-Jewish community. So anyway, we're going to be doing business with the non-Jews. So what are you telling me? Don't do business with them in Ribbis. In the olden days, when you did business with the Jewish community, so the only time you would venture out to do business with the non-Jews was Ribbis, because those were the only people you were allowed to charge interest. So Chazal didn't want that. They wanted you to stay. Keep your business relationships with the Jewish community. Don't go run to lend money to the Goyim. But Bisman is there anyway, you're doing business with the Goyim. So what do you tell me? You can't do any business with the non-Jews? It's not shy to live that way. So Tosfos writes that it must be that this Issa D'Rabbanan was only instituted Bisman HaMishnah, Bisman HaTanoim, Bisman when there was a Jewish community that was totally functioning. Now we live in Golos, so the whole Issa D'Rabbanan falls by the wayside. So a combination of these two reasons, the Balei Tosfos writes that the minhag has been to be very, very lenient about this prohibition with the Rabbanan, and therefore either Bishum Kedechayev or because we live in Golos, so one is permitted to in a sense violate what would otherwise have been an Issa D'Rabbanan. So needless to say, this is the minhag. It's been the minhag Israel for hundreds and thousands of years, and that's how we practice today. Also, we assume that it's mutl lechatchila to lend money to non-Jews, notwithstanding the beribis, notwithstanding this quasi issa derabbanan. Some of the more contemporary poskim have raised the question whether these heterim apply in Eretz Yisrael. Let's say a person now baruch Hashem, baruch Hashem zachinu, that you can have a whole a Jewish community. So a guy could theoretically do business in the Jewish community. So why does he have to go run out to go lend money to ribis to non-Jews? So if it's kedei chayiv, if Yitaka doesn't have a parnasa, that's the only way for him to make his money. Okay, so then you have the first heter. But very often it's not kedei chayiv. Very often there are other things. Other ways he can make a parnasa. And now he just wants to lend money beribis, so maybe we should go back to the old days. Chadash Shemitah and Kedem, to the oldest of the Rabbanan, as existed Bismara Mishnah. So even though that suggestion has been made, I don't know whether anybody really follows it, but Lemaisa and Minig is, I think, still to be pretty makel. The people lend money beribis to Goyim, and they assume that whatever it is, the Issa D'Rabbanan, for a variety of reasons, doesn't apply Bisman HaZeh. When we say that one is allowed to lend money beribis to a non-Jew, does it mean that it's a great mitzvah to do it? But you're supposed to. It's one of the Tag mitzvahs. So the Rambam has a very unique understanding. The Rambam counts L'Noch Yisoshich as one of the Tag mitzvahs. That you're supposed to lend money beribis to a non-Jew. It's a good thing. Not a good thing. Whatever. It's a mitzvah if you lend money to beribis to a non-Jew. So most of the Rishonim say, what? What kind of mitzvah is that? It's like putting on tefillin, like sitting in the sukkah. He said it. It's a rishos. The Torah says if you want to lend money, L'Noch Yisoshich, you're allowed to. If you lend money to a Jew beribis, so not only is that a violation of a say of lachicha losashich, that's like a bitul asay lenochi sashich. It's like an iser lenochi sashich with all the Yisrael sashich. But to say that it's a mitzvah, you make a bracha. If we lend money to a non-Jew, you make a bracha. Shir can dishar lahashich as anachi. So the Rishonim say that's ridiculous. So most of the Rishonim don't accept this Rambam. The right, the Ramban. Most of the Rishonim say there never was such a mitzvah. But the Rambam, for whatever reason, counts us as one of the Tayyik mitzvahs. So the mice, if somebody is a real, honest, to good as non-Jew, so then you're allowed to lend them money beribis, and you're allowed to borrow money beribis. So we assume that it's min haTorah for sure, it's mutter, and most probably it's mutter midrabbanan as well. So the Rishonim had a major, major discussion, which was very, very relevant, tragically, in the days of the Rishonim, as to what exactly is the status of a Yisrael Mumar. If you have a Jew who has gone so off the derech that he's become, in a sense, part of another religion, so is he considered to be, for these purposes of halacha, is he considered to be Jewish, or is he considered to be not Jewish? And we know in the Middle Ages, unfortunately, this was a tragic situation. And a lot of people like that, who are very often, it was they were forced into it, and then they continued on their own, and their children, and you had people who are technically, biologically Jewish, but they were mamish practicing Christians. So what is the halacha? Are they considered to be like Yisraelim for these halachas? Are they considered to be like non-Jews for these halachas? So we have a general question. There was a question that the Rishonim, the Gaonim raised about the many other areas of Halach, about areas related to Kedushin and Gittin and Yibum. But if someone is a Mumal, a Zara, someone becomes Mamasha practicing a different religion, whether they retain their Kedushas Yisrael vis-a-vis Halachas of Kedushin and Gittin and Yibum, what would Halacha be if such a person is Makadosh and Isha? Would we require a get or not? So this was a question in the Rishonim. So the Gemara seems to say that yes, and some Rishonim re-ramped that Gemara a little bit. So there was one opinion in the Rishonim that seemed to maintain that once the person is an Ovid of a Zara, so he basically loses his Kedushas Yisrael. He basically like Dino Ka'akam L'chol Dini HaTorah, and if he's Makadosh and Isha, you don't even require a get. But that was not the popular position in the Rishonim. The overwhelming majority of Rishonim did not accept that view. The overwhelming majority of Rishonim assumed that the person still maintains the Kedushas Yisrael. Yisrael afa pishachot Yisrael hu. There are certain halachas that he's not allowed to do for us. He's not allowed to be a sheichet, the Gemara says, and if he touches wine, the wine may become treif, the Rishonim write. And there are a lot of halachas that we have to treat him, we give him like the chumras of a non-Jew. But to say that he loses his Kedushas Yisrael, so the overwhelming majority of the Rishonim said it's not true. He does not lose his Kedushas Yisrael. That's a weak pasuk in halacha. That's what the Ramah writes in your day, Nuchas Geirim. Nuchas Geirus, we spoke about this one time when we learned Nuchas Geirus, that our practice is that if a person becomes an Ovid of a Zara, and then they want to become quote-unquote Jewish again, so we have a minig that they should go to the mikvah. It's not that they're required to go to the mikvah, it's not a real chiyuv to go to the mikvah, because they're still Jewish, they don't have to be remagayer, but we have a custom as a demonstration that they're coming back, tachas kanfei shechina, they should go to the mikvah again, b'toras minig. So we pass that the person was Jewish and still Jewish. Let's say if it's a woman and she has a baby, that baby is Jewish. The Chol Davar. We assume that just because a person is Ovid V'Zara, they don't really lose their Kedushas Yisrael. Nevertheless, when it comes to Ribbis, so many Rishonim say that Ribbis is the exception to the rule. That even though he's technically Jewish, you could still take Ribbis from him. Why are you allowed to take Ribbis from him? So the Rishonim explain that the Torah says explicitly that the reason why we're supposed to be careful not to take Ribbis from people is V'Cheyachicha Imach. We're supposed to support our fellow brethren. We're supposed to be nice to our fellow Jews. We have an obligation to make sure that they're able to support themselves. And fakir, the halacha is that if you took ribbis from a Jew, you have to give it back to fulfill the mitzvah of a chayach chichimach. Hopefully we'll talk about that in Shirum to come. So come to Rishonim and say, can you really say a chayach chichimach about the guys are practicing Ovid of Azara? So you're going to say about him, be nice to him and don't take ribbis from him, because after all, we want to support him. We want him to be happy. We want him to be part of our community. We don't want anything to do with him. It means we're not mechuyev to give him tzedakah. We're not mechuyev to support him. He chose to leave the religion, so it's not our responsibility anymore. So chayach chichimach doesn't apply anymore. So come a group of Rishonim and say that even though he's Jewish, he's technically Jewish, he has Kedushas Yisrael, if he's Mekadosh and Isha, the woman is Mekudeshes, he's technically Chayav and Mitzvahs, he's Chayav and Shmir Shabbos, he has to keep kosher, we have to treat him like a Jew, L'chol Dini HaTorah, except for Ribbis, that we're allowed to take Ribbis from him. That wouldn't be a problem, because the mitzvah, the Chayach HaChimach, wouldn't apply to him. It would be an interesting quirk, though, that we showed him, right? That we're allowed to take Ribbis from him, but he's not allowed to take ribbis from us, because he's still Jewish, and he's chayav and mitzvahs, and he's supposed to support us. We didn't do anything wrong, so he's still chayav and tayag mitzvahs. So he's chayav in the mitzvah of chayach yichaymach. So he's prohibited from taking ribbis from us. So it comes out a strange din that I'm allowed to charge him ribbis, but I'm not allowed to pay him ribbis. Because if I pay the mumma ribbis, so it turns out that I'm being machshel him in his isser of ribbis. It's chlifnei hiver, it's lososhich. So it's a strange halacha that if you would hold the person's mamish not Jewish, api din, he lost his kedushas Yisrael, so then you can lend him money from ribbis, you can borrow money from him from ribbis. But we don't paskin that way. We paskin, he still maintains his kedushas Yisrael. So the isser of ribbis in theory should apply. It's a quirk that there's no issur of ribbis for me to lend the money by ribbis, because I'm not mechuyev to support him, v'chei achichimach doesn't apply. So that's what many Rishonim write. And other Rishonim write, no, it's not true. Other Rishonim say that he's Jewish. His mom is Jewish. L'chol dini ha-Torah, finish. Bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. That just as if he's Mekadosh and Nishus and Mekudeshus, just as he has to keep Shabbos and Kashrus, so too the issur of ribbis applies to him. And I'm not allowed to lend money to him by ribbis. This is a shaila in the Rishonim. L'maisa b'zman hazeh, we very, very rarely have ever invoked this machlokes, ever invoked this kula for the following reason. That first of all, we're not sure how we paskin l'haloch on this. The Ramah writes that maybe one should be machmir, never to be makelon shail of ribbis l'mumar. Maybe we should always insist on keeping the halachas of ribbis, even if he's mamash and mumar. And second of all, the post came right, this is only true if the guy's really a mamash a fabrenta mumar. He's a really someone who's mamash a mumar, dino ka'akom, chaltavar. that Rambam writes in Uchus Mamre, very famous Rambam, the Rambam writes that when do we say that someone has the status of a mumar? That's always someone who grew up from, he knew what Torah Mitzvah was, and then he decides time to go off the derech to become an Ovid of a Zara. Mash Einkein of a person never really understood what Torah Mitzvah is all about, never grew up properly. The Rambam writes, even though he grew up and he saw Jews and he's heard of it, but it's book knowledge, it's not first-hand knowledge, he never really knew what it meant to be a Shabbat Torah Mitzvah, even though he may see a Jewish community around. So the Rambam writes, that's still considered by the Halacha what we call a Tinok Shenishba. And a Tinok Shenishba is literally a child who was taken captive by non-Jews at birth, so he was never really exposed properly to Torah Mitzvahs. So yeah, we're not happy with the lifestyle that he's chosen. We would have preferred that he doesn't become a Mumul of a Rezara. But to say that he's Dino Ka'akom, L'chol Dover, to say that he's... that we're not mechuyev to be nice to him anymore, to say that chayachichimach doesn't apply to him anymore, we're not so sure that that's true. So therefore the poskim write that bizman is there, it's very hard to make that assessment. And look now, you have a guy who really mamish grew up in a frum home, and he decided to throw the whole thing off, and he decided to become an ovid of a dazar, converted to another religion. So such a person, that would be the machlokes harishonim, whether you're allowed to lend money b'ribus to manah. But there are very, very few of those people around. Maybe in the Middle Ages you had people like that, but bizman hazeh, you have very, very few people. Like the joke goes that Bizman is that we don't have too many Amaratzim. We don't have too many, I said the joke wrong. We don't have too many Apikorsim. We have a lot of Amaratzim. In order to be an Apikoris, you have to really be, you gotta know Shas to be an Apikoris. Bizman is there, a guy's an Apikoris. It's like a joke. He's an Amaratz. He doesn't know anything, so he says Apikorsis. So the same thing also, you have to be a certain level to be a real, real bona fide Mumar. You have to be really frum to be a Mumar. But as that, most of the quote unquote Mumrim are not really a Mumrim. Most of them are just Ami Aret. So this would be a further throw out the question this had. Therefore, Bizman as that, we'd be very, very hesitant to invoke any Kula. So even though the guys in Mamish and Ovid of Arizara, we're not so sure that the Kula exists altogether. Some Rishonim questioned it. And number two, Bizman as that, to invoke this Kula and say you're allowed to lend money ribbis. The guy's not frum, so all of a sudden you're allowed to lend money ribbis to him. That's very, very shaky, Bizman as that. We usually don't follow this Bizman as that.
You have a thief to, but what is your thief in identifying?
So
let's say you're a lawyer and a guy comes in for a loan, you're doing something. You have a thief to ask, what's your religion? I mean, or can I just assume he's a guy, he's a royal?
If you don't have any reason to believe that he's
your.
His
name is Rubenstein, now he's taken his name.
Right.
But his name is Smith.
Yeah.
You know? I think
you have a right to rely on Rove. And normally, even though you have a Rove, when it's Efshel Levara, you're supposed to be Mavara, but it's very hard to be Mavara that, and it's not so nice to be Mavara that. And it's very possible, because Manazeh won't get any possible Biro, because he may tell you that he's Jewish, he may still not be Jewish. He may tell you he's not Jewish, he still is Jewish. So I'm not sure that you're Mechuf to start asking so many questions, because Manazeh. If you have reason to believe that they're Jewish, then I would be a Chayshish. Okay? We're just going to have to stop just a couple of minutes earlier. Many of us have a bris now, so we're going to stop at this point. Hopefully that's Shem next week. We'll continue.